Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for grabbing the latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. The corporate media has conferred hero status once again on Senator John McCain for his last-minute thumbs-down vote that killed the effort to kill Obamacare in the U.S. Senate a week ago. But John McCain's done a lot of jive talking, and his actions often don't match his rhetoric. Or his rhetoric changes from one election campaign to the next. Cliff Schechter, back in 2008, published The Real McCain as the senator from Arizona was running for president against Barack Obama. And while we're not going to just trash the reputation of a man who's recently been diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, we're going to do a little truth-telling instead of jive-talking. This podcast is made possible by great people who support me with your subscriptions. People like Linda Gray, Steve Wozinski, Judy Holloway, and our friend in Holland. You can join their ranks. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. Click on the menu button, then click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page where you're confronted with a few options, and you can make a choice of the level of support you're comfortable with. I appreciate it.
Doesn't anybody know how to pray?
Arizona's senior senator with the recent brain cancer diagnosis, John McCain, returned to Washington and ended up casting what is seen as the pivotal or decisive vote in blocking the Republican efforts to unwind Obamacare. Cliff Schechter is an old buddy of mine. Back in 2008, he published The Real McCain. And today, I want to take a look at the, you know, the long picture of John McCain and figure out what labels actually are accurate over time. Cliff, always great to talk to you. Thanks for being with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. It's always great to talk to you. I remember back when that book was out, I was a regular on your radio show back then.
Yes, you were. I was doing syndicated radio and on the West Coast. And then when everything imploded in 2009, we moved on to podcasting, and I've been doing it ever since. And it's a lot of fun. It's different. But I asked you to join me today because McCain does work the media, and there are a lot of reporters who are quick to declare him a hero for the vote that he cast. And I want to at least share that honor with the senator from Maine, Susan Collins, and the senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, because they didn't play any games. They stood up to Mitch McConnell and to the Trump White House and said, look, we cannot support this. And, you know, in cahoots with Lindsey Graham, John McCain was fainting. That's with an E, not an A, up until the very moment about 1:30 when he strolled back onto the Senate floor and gave it the thumbs down.
And that's a pretty, I think how he behaved throughout this whole thing is a pretty accurate summation of his career. I think people more on the right certainly do this, but some on the left where everything has to be black and white. People are great or they're evil. There's no in-between. You know, John McCain isn't Senator Inhofe. You know what I mean? He's not Louis Gohmert. I'm not going to sit here and say, you know, he was the worst representative or senator to grace the Republic. He's done some good things along the way. He's broken away on immigration. He's broken away on from his party on torture. He voted in favor of background checks on guns. But just because he's been a solidly very conservative Republican and here and there breaks when he does the right thing, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that was expected from almost all of them, right? I mean, you had your few Jesse Helms types, and most had some issues where they were a little more moderate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I will give him credit, but again, you brought up an important point. You know, first of all, they never would have been there voting on that bill at that point in time if he had voted against the motion to proceed originally, like his colleagues Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins did,
yep,
or against
Tuesday.
The whole time, who deserve much more credit than he does.
Mm-hmm.
I would also point out that, you know, it was a classic McCain type of moment. He works the media. As you said, he's been on Meet the Press more than anybody in the history of that show, and I'm sure most of the other Sunday shows, too.
I think even more than Tim Russert did, right?
Probably at this point, yes. You know, he's prone to these big speeches and, you know, the lecturing and hectoring and getting a lot of credit for it. And so bringing all that in, you know, let's also say he shows up to this huge applause and votes the wrong way, first on the motion to proceed, then votes against the bill or for the bill. He said 6 hours earlier he was going to vote against.
Right.
He votes against the Democratic amendment that would have done what he wanted and returned everything to regular order, as it's known. So he did a bunch of things that were wrong before he did what was right, almost like purposely building up the suspense. And the media, of course, then says he's a conquering hero. Well, quickly, I brought up Murkowski and Collins. What about Mazie Hirono?
Mm-hmm.
You know, senator from Hawaii who's got stage 4 kidney cancer. It's not a great outlook for her. She didn't get a standing ovation for showing up to her job and just doing the right thing.
Well, and on
a big speech
on that day on Tuesday, she had surgery in the morning and then was there for McCain's grand return in the afternoon.
Yep. So there you go. And with her. And what about, you know, let's give credit where credit's due again, because I certainly have not shied away on your show or any others from being critical of the more of the conservative wing of the Democratic Party. But on this one, John Tester and Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Manchin and the rest of them, they stuck with the party. They never wavered. And they were an important part of this thing losing, too. So there's a lot of people, I think, that deserve more credit than McCain. And while, again, the world is not black and white, he saved the day along with these other folks in the very end. Again, it's a summation of his career, which is sometimes doing what's right, but often after an arduous process of getting there and getting lots of attention and getting called a hero a lot along the way.
Well, and I will concede your points. And, you know, I'm not here to demonize McCain or to, you know, just paint the darkest possible picture. But in my view, if you put it up on a jumbotron, there are a lot more deficits than positives.
And, oh, absolutely. And
yet the,
wrong about that.
It is, again, the media that fawns over McCain and really gives him a pass for his conservative positions that are counter to, as you point out, the rhetoric that he offers, how often his actions don't match his words. But when they do
yep.
occasionally line up, people are willing to forget about Sarah Palin. They're willing to forget about the hawkishness of John McCain. And there's a powerful piece just out at Anti-War by David Stockman, who was the cabinet member and budget director
Reagan.
For Ronald Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And he just slams McCain for the war in Syria, the covert war that Trump has finally, you know, at least he's arguing with the Washington Post about whether he actually did it or not. But we are
right.
told that he has suspended the covert operations that Obama initiated to undermine the Assad government in Syria. And Stockman, you know, just goes full bore and calls it McCain's war. In the same vein, he compares it to the way Afghanistan was Congressman Charlie Wilson's war. So these are very serious deficits that McCain, you know, continues to carry.
No, and let me be clear about that, because I don't want to seem like I'm getting soft in my middle age.
Yeah, please.
And I'm just trying to give an objective portrait of the man and say, you know, he's not just because he's not, you know, Rick Santorum or, you know, one of the senators who I'd say was reprehensible in everything. It doesn't mean that there aren't many more deficits. He has been a standard, very conservative Republican, and he actually has a greater burden to bear for what has happened to his party, because he has sat there and he has enabled it and he has voted along with it. To give a perfect example, you brought up his warmongering. I mean, he's been a leader. It's not just Syria. It's Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was out ahead of George W. Bush on that one. He was pressuring Bush the entire time from the right, frankly, to stay involved and put more troops in, and then never let up on Obama. And there's never been, since he changed his positions in the middle of the Clinton administration, went from being much more of a dove to being a hawk, and joined this and started hanging around with the neocons, he's never found a war or a bombing or anything he doesn't like. That's first of all. Second of all, you know, as the Republicans, you know, I've tried to point out many times that Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, who has been more responsible at this point, everybody talks about Donald Trump undermining norms. Mitch McConnell was undermining norms when Donald Trump was still on The Apprentice. Mitch McConnell took something that was only used, you know, now and again in filibusters in extreme cases in the regular procedure that you need 60 votes in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, when President Obama was elected, overwhelmingly came up with the strategy of we'll work with him on nothing. We don't care if that hurts the American people, hurts our country. You know, we'll do nothing to work with this guy to hurt him and bring him down. Mitch McConnell is a guy who sat there and said, we're going to do something that literally ignore our constitutional duty when there's a Supreme Court seat open and Merrick Garland is the president's nominee to advise and consent. And we're just going to pretend it didn't happen and ignore it so we can get the justice we want. All of that, when John McCain talks about how important an institution the Senate is and we need to get back to working together, every single thing I just named is Mitch McConnell undermining those relationships in the Senate, custom in the Senate, that they do work together and the rest. And John McCain went along with all of it. If McCain really believed anything he said, he would have refused to vote for Gorsuch to be a Supreme Court justice because he would have said this is an illegitimate way to get here. This is not the way our democracy needs to work. He would have done the same thing with McConnell's big strategy to undermine Obama. And yet McCain, partially probably because he still hated Obama because he lost to him, but for whatever his reasons were, he joined in full force with what McConnell did and opposed just about everything. President Obama, the stimulus and health care bill and all these things, he didn't even offer even pretend that he was going to offer any support. So again, the Republican Party, and then of course you brought up one of the most important things, which is picking that dingbat, Sarah Palin, and acting like she could do the job if she became president, and in the process taking one of the loudest voices of the Tea Party and thrusting it upon it. So the reason why his party has gone literally to a point of being a group of crazy people, a cult almost, of getting together with some exceptions, is largely because he's enabled the whole thing. He's one of the few people with a media profile who could have stood up against this, and he chose not to the entire way.
But Cliff, he's a maverick.
Well, yeah, I mean, then there's that too. I mean, there was a period of time during Obama's presidency where McConnell actually was rated the most conservative senator in the Senate. And for most of the time, he was in the top 15 or 20, most conservative senators. He's not a maverick. Every once in a while, as I said earlier, because I don't believe in not giving people credit when they deserve it, he would take a vote that was a good vote, and he'd break away from the insanity of his party. But for the most part, he's enabled them. He's gone right along with them. He's adopted their rhetoric. You may remember that commercial where he was in a primary against a further right-winger, J.D. Hayworth, in 2012. And, he had a commercial where he was walking with a border agent and he said, just put up the dang fence or whatever it was. I mean, he pandered to all these very groups just so he could keep his Senate seat. So he's not a profile in courage. He's not a maverick. He's a standard issue right-wing Republican who's done a couple sane things along the way while enabling his party to get crazier and crazier. I would say there's many more deficits than there are things on the positive side.
And let's just talk about how some of his positions, which you can, at least on one level, view as courageous and counter to his party and the inside pressures in Washington, as a guy who was tortured in North Vietnam, he has occasionally, and I have to use the term occasionally because he fades in and out, but there are times when he has been a staunch opponent of torture, and he supported the closure of Guantanamo Bay. Yet when a campaign comes up, either for president or for his reelection to the Senate, most of that stuff just gets pushed into the background. I believe he wanted to close Guantanamo, and I believe he is against torture. But when Dianne Feinstein's torture report was deep-sixed by the Obama White House with collusion from the CIA and the Republican leadership in the Senate, John McCain didn't fight to get that released. And it's been completely buried. They've basically just recalled the report, and we now have a hope that at the Obama Library sometime 10 or 15 years from now, somebody might be able to crack that Senate torture report. But John McCain did not take any effort to make that public and to try to correct this this deep moral aberration in American policy.
Well, and this has happened to that is very correct, and this has happened with numerous other policies too. He was a co-sponsor of immigration reform, which he backed away from during his re-election, and since then, again, back and forth, but he was one of the biggest proponents of a sane, at least forward-thinking immigration reform policy. He also was a co-sponsor, of a bill to back in 2000 or so to close the gun show loophole, and he ended up voting on the legislation when Democrats brought it up after Newtown, but he dropped that issue too, stopped fighting for it, stopped having anything to do with it. Another one was the environment. He co-sponsored a bill in the early 2000s when he went through his mini Maverick phase, you know, where he to strengthen CAFE standards with John Kerry and a few other. He offered a cap and trade bill. I mean, again, even if you don't think these are perfect answers to our problems, he at least was trying to solve problems and acknowledging that the environment and guns and immigration, that these were issues that needed to be addressed. And he dropped all of them around election time. He's back and forth. And then, of course, there's the biggest one of all that he dropped, which is campaign finance reform, the signature campaign finance reform bill, the McCain-Feingold bill that he'd fought for, which many people would say, and I wrote in my book that I largely believe this from talking to people and other things, is that, yes, he very much believed it, but it also had a lot to do with his past being involved in the Keating Five and wanting to fix his legacy.
As soon as public memories faded about Charlie Keating and the corruption of Alan Cranston and DeConcini and McCain, who intervened to try to help this donor of theirs when he ran into an honest investigation by the savings and loan monitors. And
right.
So this was opportunism where, yes, he did help, and he was a major player in McCain-Feingold, but it really was penance for his previous sins. And as soon as he felt that people had forgotten about it, he moved on and joined the gang with the dark money super PACs and Citizens United that has even furthered the corruption of our campaign finance system.
I go even a step further than that, Peter. He in fact, voted for the very justices that overturned it. He voted for Roberts. He voted for Alito, two of the justices who decided that Citizens United was a good idea. So the irony is he made this thing, this huge cause of his, supposedly, had his name on it, around lecturing about it. But the minute this thing gets overturned, or the minute that people come along who are a threat to the thing that he supposedly agrees with so much, he's just fine. He also supported Mitch McConnell for majority leader and minority leader. And Mitch McConnell was one of the ones who filed numerous lawsuits that eventually ended up in the Supreme Court to get campaign finance reform overturned, to get Citizens United out there, and has filed lawsuits since then to overturn the individual ban on giving and other things. He's McConnell is still doing these things, and even though McCain voted against him the other night, he still is supporting him as his leader. So and that's who determines policy and determines what they vote on in the Senate. So in the end, he's enabled the very forces that he claims to be against, which goes to your point of what you were saying earlier, which is as soon as it's no longer important and no longer a big deal, and as soon as the wind is blowing in the other direction, he'll drop any of these things. And so my biggest statement about him at this point, my biggest feeling is that he'll be looked back in history as a major, major disappointment, because I think he could have made a huge difference. He always said his idol was Teddy Roosevelt. And Teddy Roosevelt is the guy who actually saw his party heading in a corporate direction and broke away and decided to run as an independent and put a Democrat in office who helped further pass some of the reforms of the early 20th century when it came to an income tax and it came to an estate tax and it came to conservation and these other issues. Teddy Roosevelt put his money where his mouth was. John McCain was starting to head in that same direction in the early 2000s after they lost to Bush, and then he let himself be bought off by Karl Rove and the gang when they said they'd get behind him in 2008. And to me, that was the key turning point in his career, where he decided that it wasn't more important to actually be a maverick, to actually be an independent and stand up for what you believe in, even if that means undermining your own party and making sure the right people get in power. It was more important to get power for yourself.
We're talking with Cliff Schechter. His book, The Real McCain, is in my hands, and I turn to Chapter 8 for the opening paragraph. In 2000, McCain went to Virginia during its presidential primary and articulated a sentiment many Americans agreed with. Neither party, he said, should be defined by pandering to the outer reaches of American politics and the agents of intolerance. He went on to identify Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell as such agents, and he did so in their home state. How long did that last, Cliff?
Not very long. It lasted, again, all that...
One campaign cycle, right?
I'm sorry?
One campaign cycle.
Well, yeah, exactly. I don't know when he made the agreement with the Bush forces to get on board in 2004, support Bush for re-election. It happened somewhere around 2003, clearly, because that's when his voting record suddenly veered back to the right, and when he started becoming a supporter of everybody in the party, and he made up with Falwell and the gang. So it was somewhere, you're right, it didn't even last a full election cycle, frankly. Or it did that cycle, but didn't even last to fully to the next election cycle. He for the political expediency, he tossed it all overboard. And again, he enabled those very voices of intolerance, because we all know they could claim that this was all about balanced budgets and the rest, but the Tea Party was always a cultural movement about rejection of modernity in all of its form, including equal rights and the rest. And he, the most intolerant Christian right, militia right, social right type voices, and he's enabled all of them. So again, there's just yet another thing that he supposedly stood for, that when it became time to make a decision what was more important, he chose himself.
And I just want to cite, because the other day The Intercept ran a good piece by Mehdi Hassan about mm-hmm. McCain's record, and in particular, they talk about him as a champion of human rights. The Washington Post claimed that he had championed human rights with verve and tirelessness. And Hassan writes, this is pure fantasy. What was McCain bearing witness to in 2009 when he offered to sell weapons to Colonel Gaddafi at a private meeting with the Libyan dictator and his son? McCain assured the son that the United States wanted to provide Libya with the equipment it needs for its security. And, of course, he did not challenge the Hillary Clinton-led Obama decision to participate in the takedown of Gaddafi under the guise of protecting innocent civilians from slaughter in Benghazi. And, this just shows the inconsistencies, and in particular, his coziness with dictators in the Middle East belies any commitment to freedom and liberty and human rights.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, he's been... friends with the most retrograde forces in Israel, Bibi Netanyahu and the gang. He's been obviously a part of a bipartisan problem where they've been close to Saudi Arabia. And you can find numerous other examples just like that.
And so, go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead. Finish your thought, because I'm going to shift a little bit.
I was going to agree with you, and you'll find many others in the Middle East and the Far East, many other dictators who he's cozied up to, as you said. So no, mm-hmm. no fighting for human rights from him.
So when his brain cancer diagnosis was made public, one of the early responses came from the sassy Australian, she calls herself rogue journalist, Caitlin Johnstone. And her headline read, McCain has brain cancer, good. And I cringed at that. It expressed my inner feelings, but despite the lack of political correctness that McCain really did trigger by choosing Sarah Palin and featuring her in that that losing campaign, he really set the tone for this kind of freewheeling expression that blows past any kind of sense of decorum and good taste. And I am willing to criticize the recently departed, but I usually wait until they're cold in the ground. And I have trouble piling on, even with a figure who I find worthy of criticism as John McCain, to a kind of nasty reaction to his personal diagnosis and suffering. So what was your reaction, Cliff?
Yeah, I mean, look, my reaction is you know, cancer sucks, and I root for any human being against cancer. So it's not one of sitting around thinking, you know, John McCain, a love for John McCain, or, you know, oh, my God. I mean, of course, I hope he beats cancer the way I would hope anybody would beat cancer outside of maybe, you know, Hitler. You know, at the same time, I can't say that it brought forth strong compassion. I like to have that some sense of decorum about these things. I also don't like to be fake.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to pretend that it hit me harder, that, you know, hit me hard in the way it would with sort of certain other people. But at the same time, no. I mean, I do think that's part of what's happened. Part of that is social media and cable culture and the rest. But part of that is certainly... as you pointed out, Sarah Palin played a huge role in that, at least in the United States, as if, you know, and she helped bring forth other figures who've done the same, who have made it so it started off with the right saying these kinds of things, and, you know, abortion is murder, and, you know, you've got Carly Fiorina talking about a live baby being killed in a table, which leads some guy to go into a Planned Parenthood in Colorado Springs and start shooting. I mean, you've seen this stuff come from the right a million times.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it never comes from the left. I mean, I think of the guy who took shots and shot Steve Scalise and was mm-hmm. shooting at Republican Congress members. But it comes from the right 9 out of 10 times. And the problem is that when people on the right are so vicious and treat those of us who just want a better world as if we're the embodiment of evil, often we're not going to react the best way, because I don't like being called names like baby killer and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've allowed this rhetoric all to come out and be acceptable. And I think that's led to a huge polarization. So, yeah, he bears some blame for that, too.
And also, it's not a secret, but the media does play it down. John McCain can be a really nasty son of a bitch. You have a quote in your book that, because of the internet, I think has kind of survived the book.
Yes, and it'll last forever, probably.
And stands on its own. Why don't you tell the story when he called his wife a trollop and something worse?
Yeah, well, I'll tell the story. I can't use that word because I can't bring myself to use that word. But he, you know, it was I think it was the 1992 campaign, if I remember it correctly. And he was with a couple of his aides and his wife on the campaign bus to win Senate re-election. And his wife made a little joke about how his hair looked like it was thinning. And, you know, he's known to you know, just off the handle, lose his temper, and he responded to her, "At least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you," and said a word that rhymes with a runt.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, that did kind of almost become its own. I mean, because, you know, I started looking around when McCain made this speech, you know, recently, and the blog that kind of takes pokes in Washington at these guys wonk at quoted that when they referred to McCain. Got a life of its own. Probably sold some books for me, but I wasn't trying just with that. It was sitting there. I remember that I openly known in circles in Arizona, and I went out there for a week and met with reporters and talked to, you know, political aides and other people. And it was something where a number of reporters were in the room and witnessed, or on the bus and witnessed it. And they were ordered by their newspaper, the Arizona Republic, not to write about it, not to include it. So a lot, I think there was a sense on their part that they wanted to get it out there somehow, and I became a perfect vehicle, you know, whatever, 16 years later.
It's your Billy.
Sure it got out there.
It's your Billy Bush moment.
Yeah, exactly. It was. Luckily, I haven't suffered as badly as Billy Bush from that. And so I think the thing, you know, more than anything that made that thing have a life of its own is that every time he would get annoyed or you know, bothered by McCain, John Stewart would have this funny clip of like a guy kind of coming out like a pirate and talking like McCain.
Mm-hmm.
And he would, of course, use that, as we would call it, salty language.
Right.
So he kind of almost even made it more famous than it ever would have been, because it suddenly was on The Daily Show a decent number of times. So, yeah.
Well, he is a complicated and contradictory figure. And as we have acknowledged, you know, John McCain does have some things that he can proudly take credit for. But on balance, I think we have to be honest about him. And I hope that people understand that while we're not trying to vilify him or demonize him, I think it's important to tell the truth. And I want to thank you, Cliff. Is there anything you'd like to add from your trove of McCain stories as we wrap up?
Nothing from the Trevor McCain stories, but I think to just emphasize the point you're making, it's important to be honest. It's as important when you look at figures to look at them versus what they could have done. And that is where he probably fails the most. It's not just that he was, you know, he's Senator John McCain and he could have done more. It's that really he had a platform, he had a media following, he had all these things that most senators will never come close to having. And he could have used that to pass better legislation. He could have used that to stand up to the far right of his party and not let it gain so much power. And he actively chose not to do it. And so that, to me, it's not just looking at him and saying whether he was successful or failed, but versus what he could have done, especially when you look at what he did on the negative end when it comes to Iraq and some of these things, he becomes an enormous disappointment. And you know, that's a shame because we needed people like him during this age when so much is wrong in our politics. We needed somebody with that platform who was willing to be a Teddy Roosevelt, and it wasn't him.
The Real McCain. Can people find the book, or is it completely out of print now, Cliff?
I still think you can find it on Amazon. That would be the place to go. There are certainly are people who sell used copies for probably what it cost you. You know what it would cost you to buy 1/10 of a latte. So, if you are indeed interested, you know, in reading it, absolutely, that you can find it on Amazon. I check every once in a while just for laughs.
And, Cliff, I even have the original publicity blurb from April 2008. And,
wow.
And see if you can name who blurbed about you this way. Cliff Schechter is either the funniest smart person or the smartest funny person. Either way, this book is exactly what America needs. A laugh-out-loud map of McCain's Straight Talk Express, complete with swerves, U-turns, and dubious pit stops.
Is that Sam Cedar?
Yes, it is.
I thought so. Yeah, and I'm still doing Sam's show on Fridays all these years later. Funny how that happens.
Oh, great. All right, Cliff, thanks for joining me today. Always great to talk to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
There you have a little Straight Talk about the guy who used to ride the Straight Talk Express. Thanks for listening. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you. Until we meet again, happy trails to you. Keep smiling.